Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
Hello, you're listening to the BBC Good Food Christmas podcast with me, Tom Kerridge. Hello and welcome to the BBC Good Food Podcast with me, Tom Kerridge. In this final episode of our special Christmas series, I'm talking about your last minute time plan with my co-hosts Miriam Nice and Orlando Murrin. Orlando, how organised are you at Christmas? Do you leave anything to the last minute? What about you, Miriam? I bet you're a planner.
Yeah, it does start with a list and then a spreadsheet, definitely.
I mean, we've got to the point where it's spreadsheets. Yeah. There's a whole computer network. Yeah, color-coded computer network. We had to build whole new computer hard drives to just build Miriam's Christmas planning.
Yes, please.
Okay, perfect. What about you, Orlando? Are you that organized?
I'm very timetabled. Very timetabled indeed. I've got, from when I used to work on a magazine years ago, we did as a free Christmas gift with the Christmas issue, a free Christmas planner tea towel, which I get out every Christmas and put on the magnetise on my fridge. But I don't follow that. That's just for sentimental reasons, because I have it all written back. And I work all the time is back from the time of eating. So every eating at 2 or 3, I'll back calculate everything, with, of course, an allowance for, you know, in case
drinking
take longer.
An allowance for drinking. You were thinking of another word for it there. You were trying to think of another thing for things getting in the way. But what you meant was drinking. An allowance for...
Sometimes you can't quite. However carefully you calculate your turkey roasting time, and I can calculate it as much as you can, because they're different shapes. Some turkeys are broad and some are tall and slender, and they take a different, slightly different time. So you can only really be within about half an hour for an ordinary, you know, family-sized turkey. So
that's which is a pint of gin and tonic, yeah?
So you have to give yourself some allowance there. And I think actually it's important to tell people that Christmas dinner isn't going to be at a time, because you can't really guarantee it. Not unless you pre-cook the whole thing. I've heard of people pre-cooking the whole Christmas dinner the day before and then reheating it. Not recommended. You did not hear it on this podcast. Can you imagine the dangers inherent of having a whole turkey cooling and then being reheated? Have you heard of this happening? Miriam, you must have heard of this. No, Tom, you must have heard of this.
No, but I do remember like school dinners and pub dinner. Like there used to be like where you cook, the joints of meat would be cooked, chilled and then sliced on one of those gravity slices and then just reheated in gravy. I mean, that's like, I mean, I can imagine that being done somewhere.
I think some people arrange it on the plates. This is so unwholesome. They slice up the turkey. They do the whole thing the day before, put it on the plates, and just do the whole thing, but don't eat it. Then they will cover it with plastic film and fridge it, we hope, and then reheat it. I'm met by stony glares from Tom and Miriam. I'm not saying, I've never done this in my life. I never would. And I'm saying to anyone listening, don't do it. But I know that people have done it because I've heard of them doing it. So they get the plates already. So they just reheat
the
plates.
You know, the more you talk about this, the more it makes you sound so guilty. the more you get. I stop it. I've heard of someone.
A friend asking of a friend.
Yeah.
And then what you it is. You so get the plates out. You just Orlando pop on Murray the cranberry. Just pop up cranberry sauce, and you know, and then you do the gravy at the last minute. You'd obviously do the gravy in a pan and put the gravy on at the last minute.
How do you know so much about this?
Remember to remove the plastic film. Said from bitter experience.
So if you're not doing it that way, if you're not doing it the Orlando way.
So let's just say you can go get too far with the prepping in advance and getting ahead of yourself. And Miriam, you're the sort of person, I think, who can overthink things and get ahead of yourself. What with all her... With all her computers and her spreadsheets... Miriam is queen of technology, and so if you go into her flat, it's like humming with motherboards and computers and ticker tape and mainframe computers and things that we don't even know what they are, all humming and whirring.
Is it like
and
Facebook headquarters?
Yeah, yeah.
Just for how to cook a turkey on time for Christmas Day for her two friends there.
Yeah, I live in a spaceship.
Yeah.
This is all completely true.
So don't overdo it, Miriam. That's my tip.
Don't start planning in.
But all joking aside, right? You're not pre-cooking it the day before and wrapping it in cling film, and you're not actually having a whole massive list written out on a computer system with 25 pages of do's and don'ts and how to do it down to the second infrastructure of what goes in the oven. However, there is a particular level of infrastructure understanding and planning that you need to put into place to make Christmas go smoothly, isn't there?
So how early is too early then?
Well, I'm always looking at the day before for me. Christmas Eve, I'm always like, okay, what have I got done? Have I got my carrots peeled, parsnips peeled? Have I even got them blanched? Great. Have I got the potatoes for roasters peeled, cooked, like blanched, not the cook, not the actual roasted bit, but they're all pre-cooked and ready to go into hot fat and into the oven, those sort of things. So I'm the day before. I do most of my cooking the day before.
Yeah, and it fits better in the fridge then as well, because if it's like parboiled and then put in little boxes or bags or something, then it fits, you can fit everything in a little bit easier. So I think that's great.
I think the shopping is incredibly important, but the shopping I would plan a week before. I wouldn't buy it a week before, but I'd plan what I needed the week before and make sure that I had everything I needed, and you know, order the turkey if necessary before that. But it all starts with the shopping, and then the work follows on once you've got it aboard or you know it's arriving.
You definitely need to order the turkey a bit before that. I mean, to get a great turkey, you've got to have them, you know, I get that planned well before.
A month before?
Yeah, yeah. Just order it with your butchers. Make sure you know where you're going to get it from. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And what's the shortest amount of time you've ever had to plan for a Christmas dinner? Have you ever had to do one just completely on the fly?
Spur of the moment?
Yeah.
Right. Fortunately not. Fortunately not. But I do think there's lots that you can... I think most people start talking about their Christmas, even in the summer, don't they? About which family they're going to go to. If you're travelling up and down, who's hosting it this year? Who's doing what? It is normally planned quite well in advance, isn't it?
The logistics, definitely.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of last minute guests turning up or last minute thing, but the reality is that most people, if you're cooking Christmas lunch, you're fairly well, you know it's going to be you a minimum of 2 or 3 weeks before, don't you?
I think it's fun to plan the other meals around Christmas as well, because, Christmas Eve is usually a bit special, isn't it? And with Boxing Day, you've got lots of food in, but you might fancy a kind of something bright and breezy to refresh yourself that isn't leftovers. So it's nice to have that around. Although you don't need to panic nowadays, because the shops are open, aren't they? So you can go and, you know, buy something if you suddenly want to make something that needs an ingredient that you haven't got, like coconut. Say you wanted to make something from a Malaysian dish with coconut in it, then you can go and get the coconut, thank goodness, which you couldn't do years ago. You were stuck.
You had to get everything that in because siege mentality. It was going to shut down for like 4 days.
It was actually, it was kind of 2 weeks. Yeah. The food shops were 2 weeks, I think.
Is there anything that you keep in the fridge now as a just in case? Is there any ingredients you have hanging around in your store cupboard or in the freezer as a last minute, oh my God, or I'm doing something? It might not be for Christmas lunch, but if all of a sudden, you know, four people drop in, a family calls in to drop some presents and it's a certain time and you go, why don't you stay for tea? Or your other half says, oh, do you fancy having tea? I'm sure Orlando's got enough. And do you suddenly glare at them first and go, what have you done that for? And then what do you rustle up? What have you got hanging around?
Oh my goodness me. I'm now I'm kind of panicking, thinking about that terrible moment happening. It has happened to me. I did, I can't remember how I handled it, but I was expecting, when I was in France, we had dinner booked for four and a party of, and I was very, it was a set menu, and we had 14 extra people turn up. And we were 40 minutes from a shop. It was unbelievable. I think I just looked in the fridge and found everything that was there and somehow transformed it into something for 20, hit the freezer and defrosted everything there as well. I did somehow get away with it, but by sheer luck, I think. But if people dropped in, one thing, I know this sounds really strange, but a really useful emergency dish, if you've got you know, half an hour or three quarters of an hour to make it. It's a souffle because you've usually got eggs, you've usually got cheese, you've usually got milk in some form, you've always got flour. And it's incredibly impressive. But, I mean, it's a bit of a bore having to stand and make it. And another one is a risotto, which I know that people might not think it's exciting, but it's a really beautiful dish made properly. And I've always got risotto rice. I've always got homemade chicken stock in the freezer, and I've usually got a little jar of truffles or something in the fridge to make
it. Hello. Oh, hello.
I've always got parmesan.
Surprise dropping in at some point.
And I've always got a ton of parmesan, so I could make a risotto, but they don't feel like party dishes, do they, particularly?
I mean, that sounds all right.
I mean, I've got to be honest, truffle parmesan risotto, yeah, I mean, that sounds like a good party dish to me.
Well, thank you, yeah, but it doesn't look like a kind of festival dish, but those are two things that I think of as a lovely emergency dish that I could make from stuff that I've got.
What about you, Miriam?
Definitely risotto rice is something that you keep in, because then you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's those kind of dried things that don't ever go off. And like having things like flour means that you can like make some fresh pasta or something relatively quickly. So yeah, just those kind of basics just really, really help you out. Having a good stocked dry store is going to help. Yeah, whatever.
And I've always got stock in the freezer because I never let a chicken leave the house without having made me a batch of stock, so to speak.
And mince pies at Christmas. Just make more mince pies than is sensible.
Frozen pastry, I think, is always a good one to have, whether it's phyllo pastry, shortcrust pastry. I mean, and then you can shortcrust over sweet as well, because then you can turn shortcrust into something sweet. And the phyllo pastry, you can layer it, you can put on top of something, make a quick pie, or you can stuff it with cheese and a few vegetables, or you can do... There's always something that you can create, but anything wrapped in pastry is good.
You can make it fairly quickly, or you can make like a liner pastry case and keep that case in the freezer and then use it for like last minute things. That would be really good.
That's really useful. And you can bake it from frozen.
Yeah.
If it's in the pie dish. Yes. You wouldn't want to bake it from frozen just before flat. You've rolled it out.
One great big biscuit.
I always worry about our listeners that they might take away the wrong impression from what we're saying and go and try and bake a block of short crust and see what happens.
And when we're talking about planning, when do you serve your Christmas lunch or dinner? Is it a daytime lunchtime, or is it an evening thing for you?
Well, it's normally halfway through the afternoon.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's normally because you're normally up early. Because I've got a little man, so we're up, obviously, opening toys and, I don't know, playing with all sorts of action figures, cars, or running around the garden shooting each other with some brightly coloured laser gun. I mean, whatever. You know, there's always something, you're always up early. Then it's kind of Christmas. You've got phone calls to make, you know, the Christmas kind of like FaceTimes, the hellos, the whatever else for people who aren't coming that day. And then I suppose you do a bit of breakfast. But that breakfast, because it's Christmas, it might be, I don't know, smoked salmon and scrambled eggs. It might be, who knows, it might be the best sausage sandwich ever. Or it might be. So you spend a bit of time making breakfast. And then before you know it, that might be 10, 10:30 in the morning, you know, by the time I've walked around with the black bag and picked up all the bits of paper, that, you know, that definitely needs to be something that gets done. It's a dad job getting that done. But then you go, okay, well, let's start cooking now. And you want to take your time. You want to enjoy it. You want to get everything going. And then by the time you've got guests coming, for me, it's normally late afternoon. Like, it's normally 3-4 o'clock-ish. And then it'll go on for an hour and a half and everyone's having a laugh around the table. So you're not normally then having pudding until, I don't know, maybe 6 o'clock-ish, 6:30, something like that. It's dark. It's like you could play a few party games, and then it means you haven't got to do tea. You could do a few cold bits and bobs, or you might just end up having cheese at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And that's kind of the day done then. Like, and I mean, and obviously in between there's nuts and crisps, isn't there?
Does AC have a little nap in the afternoon? No. If he gets up at 5 on Christmas morning, he's just carries on until night.
Yeah, he's a machine. Like, he's up and he's not a fan of sleeping, I've got to be honest. He was never a fan of sleeping as a baby. He's not a fan of sleeping now. He does quite well with no sleep. He's a bit like his dad, to be honest. He just kind of gets up, keeps going, that's it, until he drops right at the end of the day. Like, so once he's up, that's it. It's got to be full on entertainment.
That must be very wearing.
Well, I mean, I feel, to be honest, I feel more sorry for Beth. I look at her and go, oh my God, you've got two of us. Like, there's been many a time when we've been on a trampoline at 5 a.m.
What about you, Orlando? When's Christmas dinner?
Between 3 and 4.
When are you on a trampoline?
I'd like a nap occasionally in the afternoon, but I don't let myself have one. Between three and four, I would aim for. I'm very flexible on serving times nowadays. Having had to, when I was cooking for a living, have to be absolutely rigid about when food went out and it had to be on time and exactly what it said it was. I said that when I stopped doing that, I'm never going to work to a timetable again, and it will be ready when it's ready. So people have to kind of stick to that. But I mean, I would aim for 3:30 and work everything back from that quite strictly. And make sure that all the different components are aimed for, because it's annoying to remember that you haven't prepped the potatoes or something. You've done that the day before. I might not have done it the day before. Yeah. But you have to work. I think you have to work to a menu and work to a list and get it all worked out. It's like any other complicated job. And it is really complicated. Any roast meal is complicated. The time is getting everything synchronised. We're actually probably cleverer than we think, us cooks, aren't we?
Well, maybe just at cooking. I mean, yeah. And to be fair, we have been doing it a fair while.
Yes. Yeah, but every meal is different, really. So we're constantly having to rethink what we know. And, well, not every meal is different, but every home meal that you make is different, isn't it? So we have to reconfigure our knowledge to a new set of circumstances. And the number of different procedures and routines in cooking a meal is unfathomably complicated. I mean, one of Miriam's robots, she would be teaching these robots those routines for years to get them to cook a Christmas dinner. Can you imagine?
She's got someone programming.
How many robots would you need to cook this Christmas dinner, Miriam?
12. Maybe.
And
15.
Tom is doing it single-handed and keeping AC entertained and keeping Beth charmed as he goes along.
I've let myself down.
Don't forget, I've picked up all the wrapping as well. Don't forget, he's doing cleaning as well.
Yeah. He's like those little robots in Disney movies that move along, picking up after Wally.
And that's just what it's like in my house. Yeah, that's just what I've programmed. Anyway, we were saying previously that, you know, making a Christmas dinner ahead, covering it in plastic and leaving it, probably not the best idea. But there are things that you're saying that you can prep before that perhaps benefit from being made in advance. What would those sort of things? I feel like red cabbage is a good one.
Yeah, because it sits there, that pickle flavour. Things that kind of take on more flavours by being done beforehand. I mean, we always talk about braises and stews that increasing in flavour, don't we, if you've done it the day or two before. But from that kind of thesis and thinking, the sauce, the gravy, your turkey gravy you want to make, if you can make that a couple of days beforehand, leave that in the fridge, it'll set up, go all gelatin-like, the flavour of that would be absolutely delicious. And it's one of those jobs that people always do at the end, once the bird is roasted, in the last minute you're making enough gravy, and have you got enough? And, you know, all of those ways. Just get it done, get it made beforehand. And, you know, the thing about, you can have the turkey, you know, 2 or 3 days beforehand. You can trim it, you can roast the wings, you can do bits and bobs of the carcass, you can even use the turkey legs. Some people are not a big fan, they just want turkey crowns. You can use the legs to make the gravy. I mean, there's lots you can do with that sort of thing. So I would say getting the gravy made the day before is a good one.
And turkey smells so delicious when it's cooking. It really is so different from chicken. It's got a really rich flavour. It's meant to have a slight soporific effect, to go back to having a nap in the afternoon. But I don't know whether that's true. Have you heard that it's got this chemical in it that makes you go to sleep, turkey?
No.
No? Okay. Once again, I'll appeal to our listeners. Someone will know about this theory that it's got some chemical in it that
is a dosing chemical. Because you've just eaten too much.
You're in a warm room, like everyone is there, you're watching lots of nice movies that you've seen before, you've eaten a big meal, like I didn't realise it was a turkey.
Well, you're so bored of the Sound of Music again. It's like, come on, how many times have we seen this?
Oh, you're just tired because you've been in the kitchen all day, something like that, logical, but no. I didn't realise it was a part of the turkey.
But I'm with Tom on prepare your gravy, certainly beforehand, because you can really make it beautiful and it shouldn't be the last minute thing.
And you can always add some of the flavour from the roasting tin to the gravy. Yeah. That would be fine.
Yeah. Okay. And Tom, do you your roast potatoes? Do you actually, you parboil them? Do you actually set them up as well?
Cook them all the way through.
Cook them all the way through.
I gently poach them so they're cooked all the way through. So they're softer, they're cooked. Not to the point where they fall apart and they're like mash, but cooked all the way through. And then I lift them out of the water and I put them onto a cake rack so they steam dry. So that they is on a cake rack as well, so you've got air circulation all the way around, and that steam drying means that they begin to crack on the outside as they kind of like as they dry out, they shrink and the outside of it kind of cracks like that. And what happens is that's the bit that'll get all crispy, that's the bit that'll go all lovely and gnarly when you want your roast potatoes. And once they've steam dried and cooled, then put them in the fridge, not covered. Again, the fridge is a dehydrator, right? When it goes in there, it'll dry them outside. That you want them nice and cooked but dry. Then your oven on the Christmas day, nice deep roasting tray, thick layer of oil. Now, I always use a straight, clean vegetable oil, not goose fat, not beef fat, not because I'm looking for a clean, crisp flavour. Get that oil nice and hot, as if you were making Yorkshire puddings. Then take the tray out of the oven gently and then put the potatoes in and then back in the oven. Give them a roast. So basically what you're doing now is you're just crisping up the outside of a ready cooked potato. And then every 25 minutes, take them out and give them a turn so that they all begin to get, each side gets covered in oil and begins to roast up. And don't overcrowd the tray either. So just get it. So essentially, you are kind of like shallow frying cooked potatoes in the oven, which is roasting them, crisping them up. And they've got that lovely kind of gnarly outer skin where they were steam dried and then left in the fridge to dehydrate almost.
And that's about an hour in the oven, do you think? 50 minutes?
Yeah, I would give yourself an hour and a half. And then it doesn't matter if they're done in an hour, because you can take them out and leave them to one side and then you can just put them back in the oven for 10 minutes to get hot again. Like, it's, you want to get them done. Don't be everything there and then stood there waiting for the roasters and they're not ready yet. You know, like, get the roasters done.
Yeah, and I think you need that on your timetable to get them in good and soon, so they've got plenty of time.
Yeah, get the
roasters
done.
If they're a bit early, you can just keep them warm, can't you?
Would you leave them
in the oven until you're
no? I would take them out. Take them out of the oil. Put them onto a dry roasting tray with maybe some kitchen roll on it, so it absorbs all the fat, and then wait until it's ready for serving time. Put them back in the oven for another 5 or 10 minutes to get them hot again. But they're now already crispy, crunchy, cooked. Yeah. You just got to give them a quick little reheat.
And with your, presumably you serve carrots. We all need carrots, don't we, to brighten the whole thing up. Would you cook those the day before?
Carrots whole. So I peel them, top and tail them, and I blanch them again day before. So they're cooked all the way through. And I like a roasted carrot. So I'll roast them a little bit like I would do the potatoes. And I do the same with parsnips as well. I do them whole. I buy the ones that are all, try and find them. You know, when you can go to fruit and veg shops and you can actually, instead of just buying a bag and they're all sorts of different sizes, go through them, find the ones the same size.
Yeah.
I'll peel and blanch them exactly the same. And then I'll either roast them and get them nice and brown and tinged either through the oven, and then some drizzle of honey towards the end, the same with the carrots and the same with the parsnips.
So do you have an oven that's big enough to have the three the three things? Or you got have you got two ovens where you can do one?
Well,
oven?
I do the turkey like on the barbecue, so it frees everything up, and then you can get things in and out of the oven. So if you're getting them roasted and cooked and honey glazed, and then they can sit there, you can just put them, everything back in for another 10 minutes. But if you get it cooked and then reheat it. Not the day before, but get it cooked, and then, you know, and if it's an hour before you need to serve, it doesn't matter, you can get it reheated rather than waiting for everything to cook, if that makes sense. It's a lot easier then to bring everything to the table hot at the same time.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people, if you haven't got a big barbecue set up to do the turkey, you've got to somehow work with what you've got. A lot of people have two ovens.
Yeah.
But it can be a bit of a squeeze.
So you've only got the one, you get the turkey cooked, get the turkey roasted. It's quite hard to cook the roast potatoes at the same time the turkey is, you've got one oven, because the turkey creates steam. So if you're trying to get those oven, the potatoes nice and crispy, you will be doing it, but it will take a little bit longer because the oven's full. It creates almost like a steam bath. You will get them there eventually, but there's no, remember, you're going to rest the turkey for at least 45 minutes once it comes out, at least. Do you know what I mean? So you go, that gives you more time to do things. And then you can reheat everything. But I would just think of your time planning, get things cooked and reheat rather than work towards, I'll get these cooked now because that's how long I think they'll take.
Yeah. So those things, you don't work backwards from the serving time. You kind of work them forwards to get them cooked, if you see what I mean. You cook them before you actually need them.
Yes.
You get them finished before D-Day rather than at D-Day.
Exactly that. And and turkeys are quite a difficult one to get right, because timings that they'll give you are sometimes very, very different because the turkeys are very, very different. So if you've bought a beautiful free-range turkey that has taken 5 or 6 months to grow and it's a 6 kilo bird, or if you've bought a cheaper turkey that's a 5 or 6 kilo bird, but it may look bigger, well, you get a 6 kilo bird because it's grown to a particular size and that's its fully grown skeleton base, but then it puts on meat. So the breast, there's much more meat breast to it. But if you buy one that's been a little bit more intensely farmed, it has a much bigger skeleton that's taken it to being a heavier weight that then they put the weight on. So your breast might not be as big. It might not have as much meat on it. So if you've bought a free range one, that will take longer for the center to cook, even if it's a 6 kilo bird. If you've got 2 6 kilo birds, but they're slightly different, one is free range and has been out there for a long time and one isn't, you're going to have different cooking temperatures and times for the turkeys. Did I explain that well? That sounded a little complicated.
Well, no, I completely agree. And in fact, our ancestors knew that you can't just do it by the weight of the bird anyway, because it isn't as easy as that.
No.
And that's why they used to get troubled by the fact that it didn't seem ready. And the myth came around about the gas pressure going down. That's definitely not true that the gas pressure goes down. Well, it might this year, but...
What are we talking about now?
Do you remember they used to say...
Turkeys have got gas?
No, the gas oven.
Pressure, because everyone was cooking the turkeys at Christmas morning, that the gas pressure went down. And they used to say that after a football match, the electricity went down because everyone made a cup of tea. But these things aren't true. Are they true, Miriam?
You know
about power and technology. How many ovens have you got, by the way?
I've got the one oven.
One oven. So you're
one oven, car, no bike, remember?
Is there anything we can...
No garden.
Is there anything we can do in the microwave, out of interest?
Yeah. The reheating of the Christmas pudding is always a good one to do in the microwave. Because for me, if you look at traditional Christmas puddings, they're made and they're always made and they're steamed for 3 or 4 hours to get that beautiful, rich, dark cook on them. And then to reheat, it used to be you do it in a saucepan with an upside down plate and with some water in, and you then have to re-steam it for another 2 hours. Well, that's if you've only got the one oven and the four hobs, you know, one of your hobs is taken up there trying to reheat a Christmas pudding. So you can definitely do a Christmas pudding in a microwave.
And you get all that steam in the kitchen. And you are only reheating it. That's if you've got properly cooked Christmas pudding, you're only trying to make it hot.
Yeah.
But now here's a really useful tip for people that if they plan to put coins in their Christmas pudding, do not microwave it. Is that really obvious by any chance? Do you think it's worth mentioning?
I'm sure. Yeah.
But my mother used to wrap up the coins anyway in silver foil.
Put it in at serving time, I think. That would wrap it up in silver foil and then sneak it.
And warn your guests that there's a coin there.
So my nan used to do them wrapped in baking parchment and bake them in it.
Oh, right.
So it would be cooked already in it.
I thought you were going to say your nan used to do them in bacon. I'm thinking, well, that's rather tasty.
I tell you what, Christmas pudding, it's great on Boxing Day with bacon for breakfast. Like, if you've got a slice of it, fry it in butter, serve with bacon, that salty kind of like, think, essentially, if you think of Christmas pudding, like solid brown sauce. This the flavours of brown sauce, not without the vinegar and the acidity coming through it, but it's lush. That and bacon, it's like solid brown sauce and bacon. I mean, it's delicious.
Try that. And what you're mentioning about the turkey timings, and because your oven can vary, not necessarily with gas pressure, but it can vary. What sort of starters or something would you put out that would be really easy and kind of flexible while you're waiting for everything to be finalised?
Well, I'm not really the starter person. Okay. I'm just going for full, big kind of roast. I mean, if we've got people coming, there might be some crisps and nuts and bowls of that floating about, but I'm not a sit down and have a starter kind of guy on Christmas Day. What about you?
I'm not a kind of snacky person generally, the little salty, crunchy things. But I think on Christmas Day, because of the slight unknown of when you're actually going to get it to the table, to save your guests fainting or starting to hit each other, it might be good to have some cheesy, crunchy, snacky things bought or made. I mean, I make these little Parmesan biscuits, which are lovely, which you can make up to a week in advance, which are very crunchy and very rich, and you only want two or three of them, and I think that would save you that your blood sugar problems we're probably talking about here.
What about you? Are you a starter person?
It is often a bit of an afterthought, and then you're like, yeah, I just want to make sure nobody sort of starts grumbling or looking for stuff. So often it's just something really simple, like very thin slices of baguette that I've toasted with some nice cheese, maybe a little bit of pickle walnut or some gherkin or something. Just something really small and snacky that looks pretty, that takes like 2 seconds.
Because if people are drinking champagne, which they quite often are, it goes to your head quite fast, and you don't want it to go to their heads and then they fall down on the ground.
No.
So this should help. Always use alcohol wisely.
Yeah. We are almost out of time, but to kind of neatly round off this Christmas special, I think you need to help us save Christmases from disaster with your list of 10 things we shouldn't forget. Orlando's prepared a special list.
Well, as we all love lists anyway.
Presents and food, that's it, isn't it? I mean, <that's> a,
I've just made a list.
Grandma, don't forget Grandma.
I've just made a list of 10 helpful things, which I hope would take the panic out of Christmas. So, and many of them we've covered already. I'm very worried about the drinking thing that I just mentioned. I think I'm getting glaring views from our producer there about recommending people to drink too much champagne and then soak it up with cheesy snacks.
No, you weren't. You were saying you must have cheesy snacks just in case. That's it. Yours was the health and safety message.
Thank you. That's very reassuring. I'm never quite sure how reassuring it is when Tom says something like that. So the start off, do make yourself a timetable, but be prepared to deviate from it and tell people, give yourself a window of time rather than say it's going to be on the table at 3 o'clock. Give yourself an hour.
That three-letter word-ish is very helpful at Christmas, isn't it?
Three-ish.
Yeah.
And I think, personally, it's better to surprise everyone by serving up a bit earlier than they thought rather than be optimistic and having them pacing around outside the kitchen
door. I thought you were
going
to say surprise everyone by serving up salmon.
No, you don't want them pacing around anxious because it seems to be late. So better to give them, say, oh, you won't believe it, it's ready, and ring a little bell. To say that it's ready. That's our Christmas bell, which I've been dying to ring throughout this podcast. Number two, delegate. I think it's a shame when a cook says, oh, I'm going to do everything myself. It's not, after all, a kind of act of bravado. So I think it's really nice to get other people involved. And bearing that idea in mind, I'm going to delegate the remaining messages on my list. So, Miriam, would you like to take the next idea after delegate?
That was two. So three is calculate the turkey timing, including at least 45 minutes resting time. That's good.
Definitely.
Very
definitely.
Warm.
The resting time is key. So that being said, turkeys are very different in shapes and cooking times vary even for the same weight of turkey. So have snacks ready to send out in waves just in case there's a long wait.
allow plenty of time for the roast potatoes. Everyone loves them and there's no need to hurry them.
Oh, this one's a good one. If you have a digital thermometer, the thickest part of the turkey should read 75 to 80 degrees C. So you can be sure that it's all right.
Can I really recommend a digital thermometer?
Yeah, of course you can. But I would say that don't take the turkey out at 75 or 80 degrees. Take it out prior to that because the residual heat in the resting will take it to that. So if you take it out at 75 or 80 degrees, that's the temperature you want to be, it needs to reach to. Okay. So I would take it out at 70, all right, 72, and then leave it there so that residual heat continues the cooking process. Because if you take it out too hot, that's when you end up with the, that's when turkey ends up on a list being not liked because people go, it's a little bit dry, it's a little bit like cotton wool, it's a little, that's because we've overcooked it this time. So, yeah, but it must reach 75 to 80 degrees centigrade.
And to rest it, you're wrapping it in foil and then covering it with something else, or are you leaving it?
It's up to you. Some people like to wrap it in foil because they're worried about it. Not, I would just leave mine out. I leave it out and leave it to air dry. And then if you need to, the middle is still continuing to cook. The outside of it obviously will get a little cooler. You can always just put the thing back in the oven for a couple of minutes just to reheat just before you carve after its 45-minute rest.
And you've got piping hot gravy, so that'll help.
Exactly.
If your plates are hot too, should be all right.
That's it.
If you wrap it in foil, I think it can make the skin a little bit softer. And
yeah.
So it'd be nicer not to have the skin too soft, wouldn't it?
Yeah, turkey skin's very difficult. You're never going to get it crispy. It's not the same as chicken. It's got a much higher fat content as well. And the skin is thicker. So you're not really going to get crispy turkey skin. You're just going to get beautiful flavour from it.
Now, number seven, before you serve the main course, check you've got everything out of the oven and the cauliflower cheese isn't left in the oven because there's often something left at the back.
It's so easy to forget like one thing. Oh, I did red cabbage and I haven't brought it through. And eight, gravy makes the meal. It can be made ahead and then thinned down with some of the defatted turkey cooking juices.
And I think you can make all your sauces in advance, your cranberry the day ahead and prep your bread sauce as well, can't you? There's no need to be doing the sauces at the last minute.
No, absolutely not.
We checked some of the readers on the Good Food Together group have already made some of their sauces and have them in the freezer.
Excellently organised, aren't they? Number nine, try not to get hysterical about everything being piping hot. If you don't have space on the hob and in the oven, just make sure that everything's properly cooked and do what you can to get it nice and hot. But, you know, if you haven't got room in the oven, you can't get it straight out of the oven onto the table. So just keep calm about that. And good hot plates probably help, don't they?
Yeah, have a little think about the things that hold their temperature. So a really piping hot roast potato will stay hot for a longer time. The green veg, sprouts don't stay as hot. They go colder much, much quicker. So, and things like, if you're cooking carrots and parsnips, we talked about like whole, and they're roasted and finished with honey. Well, that honey is like a sugar and you can get that super hot and that almost acts like a glaze and that will keep them hot. So those are the sort of things that you can have done and they will keep out of the oven. You haven't got to heat them up as much because you've got them hotter. They stay hotter for longer. So it's the greens that you really need to worry about the most.
And the gravy, of course.
Yeah, gravy's got to be piping, yeah.
And number 10 on our list, Tom, I'm leaving to you.
It says the cook does not do the washing up.
Do we all agree about that?
Well...
This is my theory. I'm trying to help people enjoy their Christmas day. You don't agree?
Well, you got wash up as you go along, right?
Yeah.
So if you're cooking, wash up as you go along. Otherwise, you end up with chaos and mayhem everywhere. And I quite like the washing up bit. I think it goes back to the same thing where I've got the bin bag and the wrapping paper, right? I can't bear the fact that there's a... Just get it cleaned up. Just get it cleaned up. Then we can get on with enjoying ourselves. Just get it done. So in most people's houses, absolutely, the cook does not do the washing up. My house, I'll do it. Don't worry. No stress, family. I've got this.
Do you know, I like to wash up the pots and pans and my knives and things, but I'm not very interested in the plates and knives and forks. So I'd quite like someone else to put that all in the dishwasher, ideally. Yeah. So we end on a note of disagreement, as usual, don't we? We do get on really, don't we? We just disagree about practically everything.
Absolutely. It's the right way to be.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks, Orlando. And thank you, Tom.
A pleasure, mate.
And thank you, Miriam. And may you have a fabulous Christmas in the company of your robotic, your robotic household.
Thank you, Orlando. Listen, I want to say massive happy, happy Christmas to the two of you. But most importantly, not that you're not the most important, but the most importantly, happy Christmas to all the listeners to the podcast. Happy Christmas, guys.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
And that was the BBC Good Food Christmas podcast with me, Tom Kerridge. Happy Christmas.
For more festive fun, check out the Radio Times podcast with Kellyanne Taylor, who speaks to chef Jamie Oliver all about Christmas in the Oliver household. And he spills the beans on who controls the remote. Plus, he reveals his favourite festive snacks and how it was luck that landed him his first TV show. Search for the Radio Times podcast wherever you get your podcasts.